The British pound crashes to an all-time low against the US dollar. It follows the UK government's drastic tax-cutting move to fight inflation. What's the fallout on an already struggling economy, both in the UK and outside? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Hazem Seeker. The British pound is struggling to hold value against the US dollar after hitting an all-time low. It recovered slightly on Monday after plunging nearly 5%. The fall is raising concerns about the world's sixth biggest economy and its appeal to international investors. On Friday, the new British government unveiled major tax cuts based on borrowed money, and many are concerned about the amount that's needed. Now, that's led to days of volatility in the value of sterling and undermined its status as a reserve currency. Our correspondent Charlie Angela has more for us from London.
After an anxious start, the pound seems to be clawing back some of its losses and has steadied somewhat. But the public, investors and banks are understandably still very nervous. And they're placing much of the blame on Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng, asking what is his plan to balance the books after the largest tax cuts in 50 years. Now, the Chancellor will be meeting with some top bankers and senior city figures later on Tuesday in planned talks that will probably evolve into a form of crisis meetings. And that's because interest rate predictions are already rising. Britain's now looking at an interest rate of 5.8% this time next year, a huge hike on last week's prediction of just 4.5%. As a result, we're seeing some mortgage lenders pause or pull their products from the market, worried that they won't be able to meet their margins or that people won't be able to make their repayments. And that's going to be a huge blow for people who were trying to get on the property market or needed to remortgage their properties, all at a time when the cost of living in this country is increasing at its fastest rate in 40 years. So businesses and markets are spooked. They were looking to the Bank of England for some decisive action, but will have to wait until their next meeting on November 3rd. The government, however, says it will bring forward the day it plans to publish its medium fiscal policy from next year to November 23rd. But that's still 9 trading weeks away. What's needed right now is confidence and stability. And for that, the markets need to see a macroeconomic plan that they believe in.
Now, the opposition party wasted no time giving its verdict. Labour's Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves accused the government of gambling and said the British taxpayer will pay the price.
Sterling is down. That means higher prices as the costs of imports rise. The cost of government borrowing is up. That means more taxpayers' money will go into paying the interest on our government debt. And in turn, that means the cost of borrowing for working people will now go up too.
So how will a falling pound affect people? Well, the UK imports more than half of its food, so the cost of everything from apples to coffee will go up. The rise will be especially notable in goods traded in US dollars like oil and gas. Lower income families will be the hardest hit, with their earnings having to stretch even further. With winter approaching, heating costs are another concern. Britain's money also won't go as far if they travel to the US or to countries using the dollar. But for tourists, the drop in the pound means it will be cheaper to visit the UK.
The situation looks like it's just getting worse and worse and worse.
That are poor right now, that are on lower incomes, they're struggling. They're struggling with their heating and all their bills. Everything's gone up. Why on earth would they be cutting it for the people in a higher income bracket? It's ridiculous. London's getting worse. England's getting worse, to be honest.
You could argue that it's a good strategy because it'll attract sort of businesses to come and set up their establishments in London. So to that extent, perhaps it is a good decision. But on the other hand, again, it's going to reduce the overall, say, for instance, the money that can be allocated to welfare benefits.
I think closing is going to be a bit of a challenge. But it's good to have a mini budget. I just wish that during this time of national crisis that we were spending a bit more on those most in need.
I'm thinking, what does that mean for me now? And some of the fun things, I was just at Covent Garden and walking along the shops there and deliberately not going in some places. Maybe I'll go back.
That's a big plus. That's a big difference when you get more bang for your buck, it makes people want to travel more.
Of course, like during this time, you can spend money on purchasing things because it's a good time to do it because we're not earning, you know, pounds.
Well, let's bring in our guests now. In London, we have Vicky Price, Chief Economic Advisor at the Centre for Economics and Business Research. In Dublin, Brian Lucey, Professor of International Finance and Commodities at Trinity Business School. And also in London, Jonathan Liz, journalist and political commentator. Good to have you all with us. So, Vicky Price, let me start with you. It's being called Trussonomics, these tax cuts. Named after the new British Prime Minister. Clearly, they haven't gone down well with the financial markets. Why is that?
The real problem has been that the Chancellor, who is newly appointed, of course, by Liz Truss, the new Prime Minister, announced a mini-budget, if you want to call it that, which wasn't very mini at all, but actually introduced tax cuts to the tune of £45 billion, pounds, which is the biggest size of tax cuts that we've seen since 1972, and it made people worry about the inflationary impact of this, but also how that injection into the economy, if you like, would be funded. So what happened, of course, as a result, not only did sterling suffer because there were concerns that the inflationary element would be quite significant of those new measures, but also, of course, bond markets reacted very negatively, and we've seen yields rise very significantly. In other words, the interest rates that people want to have if they are prepared to lend to the UK government, they've risen to over 4%. And that's huge because, if you remember, just a year ago, yields on 10-year government bonds were below 1%, and now we are above 4%. That's a very substantial increase in interest rates, which is going to be felt throughout the economy because loads and loads of long-term rates are based on those yields.
Why is this affecting the pound so much? Why has the pound fallen so precipitously in the last few days?
Well, the one reason, of course, is that inflation now looks to be a little bit higher. Now, remember, of course, that we had a mini budget, which not only, of course, injected this extra money into the economy, but also gave the amount of money that would be needed for an electricity price freeze, which was introduced also by the new government. But, of course, we hadn't heard some of the details. Now, that electricity price freeze itself should be bringing inflation down quite significantly by possibly 4 percentage points. So the Bank of England was quite right to raise interest rates by just 50 basis points the day before. That was September 22nd. The markets didn't like it very much because everyone else has been raising interest rates recently by 0.75%. But nevertheless, I think it made sense because those were the inflationary projections that were now being made. Then you added the real worry of this unfunded budget and all the money that would be coming into the economy, fueling inflation again. So what the markets decided was that actually that interest rate increase wasn't sufficient because now you have once again an increase in inflationary expectations because of that. So the pound suffered because there wasn't an underpinning interest rate support, if you like, to keep the currency up. And that's why they punished the pound.
Brian Lucey, what does this mean for the rest of the world as well, for the companies that do business with the UK and for others that want to invest there in the future?
I think if you were a company that was selling into the UK, you've got a problem with depreciation in the sense that it makes stuff more expensive for people in the UK. But the nature of the tax cuts is incredibly skewed. And it really is the case that this is wonderful if you're selling caviar, high-quality leather goods, or other forms of consumption for the very rich. The vast majority of people in the UK aren't going to see any benefit from these tax cuts, except, as Vicky has said, in terms of inflation. So overall, I would say this makes, for a number of reasons, the UK a less attractive place to do business. The big problem is not the particular issues. I mean, governments fiddle around with tax cuts and interest rate changes happen all the time. The difficulty is that there seems to be a degree of incoherence and even bordering on incompetence around what's going on. And that doesn't foster any degree of credibility. For the last 6-7 years, the UK has been looking like an increasingly economically incoherent outfit. starting from Brexit, then through the negotiations, which resulted in about the hardest Brexit short of the World Trade Organization, which is still something desired by the intellectuals, as it were, behind the Tory party, through now a series of events which have, you know, undercut the Bank of England's inflation fighting efforts. And we know from bitter experience in the 1970s and early 80s that in the long term, inflation is, you know, very destructive of a country's well-being. So it's kind of strange that you've got a chancellor who has a PhD, which was on the a UK sterling crisis in the 17th century, who has found himself in his first actions arguably precipitating the sterling crisis. It has to be remembered that much though the UK government might think, sterling is not really the world's reserve currency, that's the dollar. And while it is highly desired and highly demanded and held as a reserve asset, liquid reserves by the Bank of England, should they be so desirous as intervening directly in the foreign exchange markets, are very, very limited. The Financial Times today estimates that they are approximately $100 billion, which is really a drop in the ocean when you consider how much sterling is traded. So it's not the individual elements. It's the death by a thousand cuts of the myth of the Tories as being a party of good economic competence that I think will be the long run problem here.
Jonathan, Liz, this is being seen as a huge political gamble for the new British Prime Minister. And whenever a new leader comes into the job, their political capital is normally at its highest. So has Liz Truss essentially put down all her chips on this?
Liz Truss has staked the entire house on this political gamble, and by any measure, she has lost. As you say, Well, it wasn't in Liz Truss's plan to crash the pound, I presume. It wasn't in Liz Truss's plan to have an emergency statement by the Bank of England suggesting that they might have to raise interest rates before the next scheduled meeting of the Monetary Policy Committee. And I don't think it could have been in Liz Truss's plans to see soaring interest rates, which are going to see mortgage rates increase by several hundred pounds for homeowners with mortgages, who, let's not forget, are one of the bases of the Tory party. They're the voter base. They're actually the demographic which turned much of the North and Midlands for the Conservative Party in 2019. And so this is a political as well as an economic disaster. And I suppose that investors are a bit like predators in horror films. They kind of, they can sense panic. They can see when people don't exactly know what they're doing. And at the moment, both the government and the Bank of England are in a position of extreme weakness, not least because they are pulling the levers in different directions. The government is trying to accelerate the economy, whereas the Bank of England is putting a firm brake on it by raising interest rates. And investors can see there is no coherence in that plan. And as a result, they are taking fright and taking sterling out with them.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that clash between the government and the Bank of England and their priorities, because the Bank of England, like many countries in the world, does enjoy a certain level of independence. They can set the interest rates. With this sort of growth-focused goal of Liz Truss, is it fundamentally at odds with the inflation-fighting mission of the Bank of England?
Well, I would agree that there is a bit of a schizophrenic existence right now between the government and the Bank of England. The Bank of England is indeed, as you rightly say, independent, although there had been some hints during the campaigns for deciding the new Tory leader, that Liz Truss was questioning the independence of the central bank, or at least some aspects of it. Now, that independence is very important, but of course the remit that they have, which is given to them by the government, by the Chancellor, is to keep inflation at 2% target if they can. Now, of course, that target has been hugely exceeded in reality, in the sense that we now have 10% inflation or thereabouts, but it's no dissimilar to what's happening in the US, what's happening in quite a lot of other countries, including, of course, in continental Europe overall. So the ECB is also having this particular problem. And in fact, if you look at some of the countries in Europe, particularly those that are bordering Russia, we've had inflation of over 20% for quite a few months now. So there is no doubt that we've got a problem if whatever you're trying to do on the fiscal front is negated by what happens on the financial front. And the way in which the government has gone about trying to get more growth inevitably led to this reaction in terms of interest rates, not just what the Bank of England does, but also, more importantly, I think, what's happening in the bond markets. So interest rates going up is, as Jonathan was suggesting, pretty dreadful for a number of individuals, of course, for a very large number of households, but also will be pretty bad for business, which have just been quite happy to see a bit of relief on the energy front, even though it's short-term, and we'll see what happens next. And now are being hit by this. And it's not at all surprising that all the data we already have in terms of consumer confidence and business confidence has tended to move downwards. And I think what's been happening in the last few days will move it downwards even further. So how the whole thing will be resolved, of course, is a question mark. But I have to say, this is not the only country where this is happening, but it has been shown in a more vivid form because of this mini budget, which was unexpected in its size, and which the markets indeed believe is unfunded and therefore posing loads of problems for the economy.
Brian, Lucy, what's your take on this? This conflict between the government and the Bank of England and their mixed priorities?
It's not mixed priorities. These are absolutely orthogonal priorities. The only way in which this can work is if the economy grows through these massive tax cuts. And this is Reaganomics in 1992, with the ghost of the Laffer curve and trickle-down economics, which is just bunkum. I mean, this is voodoo economics, as George Bush famously once called it, before proceeding to keep implementing it. The one thing that Reaganomics did was to absolutely balloon out the UK, the US national debt. And doing the same now for a medium-sized economy facing significant problems already is, as was said, not just betting the house, but betting the children's houses. The logical end game here for the UK government is to reduce the independence of the Bank of England. Now, I don't think that's economically sensible at all, but that is the logical end game. You can see the story where they say, look, the Bank of England are shackling our ability to grow the economy through aggressive tax cuts and restructuring. Therefore, we must reduce their independence, because interest rate rises are a bad thing in this context. That's politically sensible, politically coherent, but ends up economically in an incredibly bad place. And I think the UK is in danger of that. Because what we are not seeing, we have not seen for the last 7 years, is economic, technocratic, sensible decisions. We've seen increasingly frenzied ideological decisions driving economic outcomes. And there's no evidence that that appetite for ideological-based economics is being reduced in any way. In fact, if anything, it has become into sharper focus with the election by 83,000 people, very unrepresentative of the UK population, of an extremely right-wing, economically right-wing government.
Jonathan, Liz, how do the Conservative government recover from this politically, from the political fallout over this? Because the optics of this on the surface certainly don't appear to be good. You know, this tax cuts that mostly the richest people will benefit from in the middle of a cost of living crisis, energy crisis, and so on.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, that they have sabotaged themselves politically. And I suppose the bigger point is that this actually wasn't an economic measure on Friday. This wasn't an economic mini budget. This was a political act. This was motivated by politics more than economics, which is why economists were condemning it and markets were voting with their feet, because it made no sense economically. Liz Truss says that her overriding ambition is to promote growth, but the moves that she made, or the moves that she and her chancellor have made, are not going to promote growth. And the bills, such as to remove the 45p additional rate of tax on the most wealthy people in society, and to lift the EU cap on bankers' bonuses, which was introduced after the financial crash, are not going to promote growth really at all. Evidence suggests that those measures won't really affect growth either way, but they are political measures to chime with a hard-right conservative ideology which favours the rich, particularly in the eyes of Labour clichés of conservative thinking. But the Conservatives are walking into that cliché, favours the rich of the rich and allows the super-rich to benefit most from tax cuts, leaving the poorest with almost no benefits whatsoever. So that is the kind of the policy platform which Truss has now firmly planted on the British electoral terrain. And I don't see why she's done something so deliberately, how she can reverse it, because no one forced her into that position. She has chosen that of her own volition entirely. And so I don't see how she suddenly decides to reverse that. And more to the point, I don't think she wants to reverse that. And that really is a gift for the Labour Party, because they can show that the Conservatives really are a Thatcherite party in times where Thatcherism is not the cure for any condition. And so if the Labour Party just talks about bankers' bonuses and tax cuts for the richest, they really can walk through the next election without too many problems. And I don't see how Truss recovers at all. Her party may decide to get rid of her before the election.
Vicky Price, is there any way to recover from this? I mean, if the financial markets stabilise over the next few days and the pound at least stops falling the way it has, what do you think could happen further down the road?
Well, it's interesting, you know, what room for manoeuvre is there? I mean, the interesting thing is that quite a lot of the rout in the markets that we have seen, so the rise in yields, the concerns of the markets about the debt and the expectations maybe that the Bank of England would do an emergency interest rate hike, which they didn't do in the end. They said they'll wait until November, has also been caused by the fact that the Chancellor announced just a couple of days after the mini-budget that there will be more tax cuts to come. And I think that's what, if you like, sent the pound falling even faster. But, of course, you're quite right. It's sort of recovered, and I think they're hoping that maybe the markets will forget about this for a while, but we can't get away from the fact that the pound has already fallen very significantly this year. It's gone down by between 20 and 30% just from the beginning of January on revised expectations, as we were hearing earlier, about the growth prospects for the economy. We are at the bottom, if you like, of the G7 league in terms of growth, it seems. And the forecast which just appeared from the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, look at various countries in Europe which may be in recession next year, and those are Germany, Italy and the UK. A bit earlier it was almost only the UK, but now, of course, because of gas concerns and rationing, okay, we've seen the other countries added as well.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks very much to all three of you, Vicky Price, Brian Lucey and Jonathan Liz. Thanks very much for being on Inside Story. And thank you as well for watching. Remember, you can see this program again anytime. Just go to our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle there is @AJInsideStory. For me, Hazem Sika, and the whole team here, bye for now.